Telemedicine is often defined as a remote diagnosis and treatment of patients when you're using telecommunication technologies. And there's so many advances in computer and smartphones that more and more ways for doctors to communicate with or diagnose even patients who are not even in the same room. And it's pretty exciting. Here to tell us more, we have Dr. Joel Gordon, and he's with the Mayo Clinic Health System in Mankato. He practices in family medicine. And Dr. Gordon, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time tonight.
Thanks, Buck. I'm happy to be here.
You know, my brain kind of swims with all the things that can happen on smartphones, even on mine. And that's pretty limited what I can do with a smartphone, but I have seen a lot happening via videos and other information that's come across my computer. You actually work with it. Can you tell us a little bit about telecommunications and how they're popping into what you do?
Buck, you're right. You said your head is swimming. I think for the most part, the whole healthcare industry is swimming a pretty fast torrential current right now when it comes to healthcare technology. And it's exciting. It's really, really exciting. It's giving us so much more power and safety and efficiency that we could only dream of in the past. But with it, there's a certain level of reservation and in that it's a two-way street, typically. We're increasing the communication, but it's communications between providers to other providers with telemedicine, and I can talk a little bit about that and how that's exciting and it's changing the world and really helping patients. But a lot of people are more interested in the connection of the patient to the provider, and that, too, is exciting and has and I have some really specific examples about how that has improved the care that I can provide. The part I think we'll also should talk about is that sense that you said when you said your head is swimming, and that on the other end of that is a human being with the providers, and some of them are feeling a little bit overwhelmed with the advances of technology, and how do they keep all that on is possible? How do they keep that as an expertise when it seems like as soon as you learn one thing, it's changing into two or three generations of development beyond where your comfort level was with the technology?
Do you find that that this new technology in any way kind of gets in the way as far as you relating to your patient closely?
That's a great question. In fact, when we first went live with electronic medical record about 7 years ago, I think it was, we were on paper record. We had limited amount of electronics at that time. You know, there was certainly some computer work going on, but it wasn't quite so injected into the care that I was giving, where it was all-encompassing. And I remember that first month or two almost feeling like a new medical student again, here as 17 years into practice, and the disruption of having this computer in the room was really evident. I was struggling even remembering common diagnoses and common treatments because I was so distracted. In fact, I've read some articles. I have a great passion for this conversation that we're having, and so I'm an avid student of this part of healthcare, and read about it and study it. But one of the lines I heard from one of the journal articles 5 or 7 years ago is, a computer in the room is not any different than a 3-year-old in the room. And that level of distraction is definitely evident.
Sure. Was the first phase of this was just getting all those records online or digitalized?
Yes, that first phase is really, I mean, the backbone of healthcare technology is the electronic medical record. In fact, it's sometimes in conversations with patients or with other providers, it's almost like the electronic medical record has become the care that we give almost. It's that essential. So the electronic medical record, which used to be the paper chart, that really is the backbone of all that, and then all the things, whether it's a smartphone or an app or, you know, other sorts of telemedicine devices, those all just kind of fishtail off of this backbone called the electronic medical record.
Can you describe some of the equipment or the technology that you use now that you're finding that you can use now to really look closely at the human being who's in front of you, or sometimes not in front of you as you're talking about their ailments?
Well, let me give you an example of that. That is where I'm actually on the giving end rather than the receiving end of that information. In Mankato, we have an obstetrical group and we have a very good pediatrics group, but we don't have neonatology, which is the intensive care unit for newborns. And occasionally, without expectation, a baby can be born, and it's suddenly we're needing a neonatal intensive care unit, but we're a life flight away from that. And with Mayo's neonatal intensive care unit, our pediatrics doctors that cover those newborns actually have the ability to use Skype with an iPad, and it's as if the neonatologist is in the room when we get a bad baby. And it has saved numbers of babies' lives because the ability to talk with someone over the phone is helpful, but the ability for them to talk with you and see what you're doing and say, no, don't do that. Grab it over here or touch this or grab that instrument. They can be just like they're standing at the bedside with those newborns. So that's an example of how technology with something that you use every day, maybe you'd Skype with a family member in California or a loved one across seas, we're using that same technology in healthcare in order to make a really big impact, as big of impact as, like I said, as even saving lives.
Do you feel more confident now that you can pull information out of the cloud or out of your record files digitally that maybe in the past you weren't too sure what was on those written papers?
Oh my goodness! I can't emphasize that enough. You know, in the paper record, I can always look at a number, and I can, let's say, I'm talking with a patient about anemia, and I can say, your hemoglobin is a little bit low at 10, but I couldn't really, without turning pages and pages and studying every page and kind of getting lost in the labyrinth of the paper record, I couldn't really make sense of a trend. Nowadays, with a touch of a button, when I'm talking about your hemoglobin being low, I can push one button and I can show you all of your hemoglobins over time and I can graph them so you and I can recognize things, because they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. I can graph pretty much every piece of information in your chart from any time that you've ever been involved with me, which makes me almost all-knowing, which is far from the truth. But it's definitely, I've met a lot of providers that complain about maybe technology or really about change of technology and how it's really changing the world that they live in. And I've heard a lot of providers complain about the electronic medical record or how it could be improved. But of those thousands of conversations, I've yet to hear anyone say to me, I want to go back to the paper record.
Sure. I know I heard some grumbling from doctor friends of mine as they were going through that, but at the same time, they understood, what it would open up.
Correct.
So even though it was not that much fun to go through all the basics to begin with, it pays off.
It does. I mean, and I don't think we're through the basics yet, truthfully. As I look at trends of adoption and really the technologies that are out there, and really if you start to analyze what doctors are really using what is the potential, I think we're barely tapping into that. But I think that's an expectation. I mean, I think that's typical when you think of an industry that has so much at risk and so much as far as regulation and that sort of thing. It is a kind of a good old boys club in a way, healthcare is, but those times are changing, and I think the ability for us to expect incremental improvements in the care that we deliver is, I think that's right on.
We're speaking with Dr. Joel Gordon, and Dr. Gordon is with the Mayo Clinic Health System. He's in Mankato. He works in family medicine. He's also works quite a bit and has a firsthand knowledge of some of the new trends in telemedicine, which we're talking about tonight. With more information available to the doctor talking to the patient, I would assume that the patient is going to understand better what he's hearing.
I do have some patients that have definitely reiterated themselves when they've gone home and read my record and read what I've typed and read what I've put into the document. They've called me and said, actually, Dr. Gordon, you're mistaken. I did not say it's 10 days. It's been going on 10 weeks. And or things of that nature, it causes me a little bit to go, oh my gosh, people are really investigating what I'm saying and doing. But it's a good thing. It's a very, very good thing because I'd really like patients to be having corrective action on things that may be mistakes. And I think it's there isn't any industry that's quite as dangerous as healthcare. Truthfully, statistically speaking, you can fly lots and lots of airplanes with much more safety than you can with a single hospitalization. So knowing that, we have to be, in the healthcare as providers, we have to be mature enough to admit that we can make mistakes and we want patients to help us to protect them.
I was trying to think of examples where the patient having more control over the information that he gets, or at least more access, rather, is probably a better way to say it, can change their behavior. And some of the abilities they have to check, if you're a diabetic, to check your glucose levels might be one example of that. Can you talk a little bit about how the patient might be able to change his behavior?
I think that's a great, there's so many ways that we can talk about behavior change and lifestyle change because of technology. But we'll use the talk about the glucose monitors because that's what you referenced. When I am starting a patient on insulin, one of the things that's really important that is I don't want their blood sugars to get too low because that can be very dangerous, but I don't want the blood sugars to get too high, and so it's a titration that we're going to go through with that medication. Between the giving of the insulin and then the poking of the finger and the using of the lancet and putting it on the strip and putting it in the machine and then having the machine give me a number, and then I have to read that number as a patient and I have to write it in a booklet, and then I have to remember to keep that booklet around so I can always find it, and then I have to bring that booklet to my doctor. There's a lot of steps if you can't see what I'm talking about. Nowadays, most of the glucose monitors have the ability for someone, when they check their blood sugar, the newest ones, that when they check the blood sugar, it actually will Bluetooth to your computer that's in your, and you don't even have to do anything. And with Mayo's future applications, of which there's a lot of talk about, a lot of buzz about that right now, because there's a long commitment between Mayo and Apple that's getting stronger all the time, those Bluetooth devices will feed right into their medical record, eliminating so many steps in that process that I was describing previously, so that when you give your insulin and you take your blood sugar, your job is done. Everything else goes right to me where I can be watching remotely or have a nurse in my team watch to say, you know, we better back off on the insulin. By the way, we're noticing some downward trends, or maybe we should press that insulin up a little bit because your numbers seem to be going the wrong direction.
I think any one of us who have either had problems like that or have friends that are diabetic realize how important those figures are to the patient's health.
They are. And that it's just amazing how, when you really think of it, of workflows, how many steps there are into that simple thing of just taking a blood sugar. There's so many steps, and we need to eliminate those steps and get it a lot more efficient for the patient and actually probably much more accurate as well.
I know some of this is still out there. It's not really been tested or maybe even not approved, I'm not certain, but there are so many new devices that work with a smartphone in medicine. Can you talk about what you know about a few of them?
Yes, I can. In two ways. One is patient-centric, and the other one is more of about the healthcare system. The first one I'll talk about is the EKGs. In the field, the ambulance drivers have the ability to take an EKG, but an ambulance driver and ambulance people may not be cardiologists, obviously, to be able to read and interpret the fine details of that EKG. And so that EKG in a piece of paper, which is the electrocardiogram, tells us about possible heart attacks. That piece of paper is driven with the patient back to the hospital, which could be 20 or 30 minute drive based on rural populations. And then the doctors will look at the EKG and say, oh my goodness, it looks like there is a subtle heart attack and we need to start this, that, or another medicine. And those medicines were in the ambulance. So nowadays, when ambulance are are Wi-Fi enabled, so that when that EKG is taken, that EKG is read by the doctor waiting in the emergency room, and those medicines and treatments can start. As they say, time is muscle, so how much time it is between the start of a heart attack and the time that you can intervene on that, that time, the shorter you make that, the healthier the person is in the long run as far as recovery. So that's the first idea of how technology can kind of change with these wearable devices and those sorts of things. The other thing that's more patient-related is that, you know, I'm seeing more and more patients come in with wearable devices. Bluetooth enabled devices on their iPhones and whatnot, so that they come in and they can talk with me about their health issue. And we know that exercise is medicine, and people can talk about the number of steps that they've taken as in a pedometer, or they can talk about the amount of calories they've burned based on different exercises that the devices, the Fitbits and those sorts of things, will monitor. Also, they'll talk about sleep. If a patient's suffering from depression or such, I can say, boy, well, it looks like your sleep really went haywire about a week and a half ago. The patient will say, well, yeah, I was struggling with a lot of pain from my back that I twisted when I was doing gardening or whatever. Well, that's important for the depressed patient to not sleep well. We need to fix that, and that can be a device that can be used. In Mayo, we're moving more and more to a team-based care, too, because me as a doctor may not need all that information. It may be overwhelming. But as I have nurses and case coordinators that work with me, they can be kind of sifting through those information, those things that are updates from those devices versus those things that are critical information from those devices.
I know, following up with what you just said, I have a relative who's had a couple of heart attacks, and he's only supposed to do certain things, and one time he got a little carried away helping with a little construction project, and when he went in to see his cardiologist, he knew exactly which day he had been misbehaving.
Yeah,
you can't get by with anything.
Big brother's watching.
Big brother's watching, and thank God he is. In that case, you mentioned what it can mean to a heart attack patient, and the same would be true for somebody who's had a stroke or is having a stroke, if those things can be caught in time.
Yeah, telestroke is really big right now. You're right, heart is muscle, but so isn't brain. So with the onset of the stroke, there's different treatments we have to do because strokes aren't all the same. There's many different types of strokes. And the treatment, unfortunately, for those types of strokes is different. In fact, if you treat a certain type of stroke with the other type of stroke's medication, you'll actually exacerbate or worsen the stroke, and the outcomes will be worse. So in the societies of neurology have a really clear cut algorithm of what should be done, and some of those algorithms are getting a CAT scan earlier or even involving a neurologist earlier. And many rural hospitals and rural care facilities may not have a CAT scanner or may not have a neurologist to intervene, and so telestroke is something that's really one of probably the furthest along of the telemedicine avenues, because that need was noticed really early on, and strokes can be so devastating if you don't treat them accurately and correctly and quickly. And so that swiftness of the telestroke has made a world of difference for patients' ability to stay home or recover from a stroke, as opposed to being left in a nursing home or with other disabilities.
We've been speaking with Dr. Joel Gordon, and Dr. Gordon is with the Mayo Clinic Health System. He's in Mankato. He works in family medicine and also works with telemedicine. Dr. Gordon, I know we've just kind of scratched the surface on this topic, but I've learned a lot listening to your firsthand knowledge, and I really appreciate you giving us your time tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Buck. I, like I said, there's so much that we could talk about. We could have a series together, couldn't we?
We could. Well, thank you so much.